of Christmases Long, Long Ago is my new book, arriving for the 2025 Christmas season. Find out what Christmas was like centuries ago. Sneak preview, it was weird, and spooky, and rowdy, kind of gross sometimes. Find it wherever books are sold, in hardcover from Lions Press, and audiobook from Recorded Books. It's Christmas as you've never seen it before, and it makes a great gift. I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. Christmas morning, 1902, in a grand old house of a grand old family. A couple with their six children. The house dressed for the season. Evergreen boughs on the mantels, wreaths on the doors. The children woke up early, of course, banging on their parents' bedroom door, racing down the halls. In the library, six stockings hung from the fireplace, bulging with treats and gifts, hanging for eager hands to tear them open. But the children weren't the only ones receiving gifts that morning. The second youngest son, little 8-year-old Archie, had a surprise of his own. He led the family to a closet, grinning wide, his secret barely contained. Opening the closet to reveal inside a tiny Christmas tree, 2 feet tall, wired with those newfangled things called Christmas lights. And hanging from the branches, gifts for his parents, brothers, sisters, and even all of the family pets. A surprise, for sure, but not the good kind. Because the father of the house had some very strict ideas about cutting down trees for something as frivolous as a decoration. The house had no Christmas tree, and that's why Archie had to smuggle this one in. And the father of the house was used to getting his way. And not just because it was 1902 and the man of the house was commander-in-chief back then. Well, maybe a little bit of that. Maybe a lot. But mostly because in this case, he actually was the commander-in-chief. Theodore Roosevelt, 26th President of the United States, a staunch conservationist, a man who banned Christmas trees from the White House. The episode was later reported in the Ladies' Home Journal.
Little Archibald had been for some days arranging a tiny Christmas tree in one of the clothes closets which he discovered was rarely opened by his mother. All the family was there, but none appeared more astonished than Mr. Roosevelt himself at the sight.
For the first family's first Christmas in the White House in 1901, and then again in 1902, newspapers coast to coast ask, would they have a Christmas tree? Then came the reports about roguish little Archie defying his father, scheming to bring the family a real Christmas tree whether the president liked it or not, about how he conspired with the White House steward to buy it at the market, and the White House carpenter to wire it with lights, how he even tapped Roosevelt's own Forest Service chief to bless the idea. For years, newspapers ran with it. Every December, column inches filled with speculation. Would Archie outfox his father again? Would the Roosevelt children, full of mischief and Christmas cheer, manage to pull another fast one on none other than the President of the United States? Readers ate it up. They followed the continuing adventures of the rascally Roosevelt boys as they plotted their holiday hijinks. One year, Archie declared he had outgrown Christmas trees, sparking a spat with his younger brother, Quentin. The press reported on that, too. Except, none of this is really what happened. This isn't the story of a stern father denying his children something as basic as a Christmas tree, or of a child's act of both generosity and defiance, of creativity and mischief. No, it's a story about the birth of a story, about how several truths can be layered to form a lie, about how legends are born and how they refuse to die, and how sometimes the real story was the better one all along. The Roosevelts really did choose not to have a Christmas tree at the White House. That much is true. But that wasn't actually unusual in 1902. White House Christmas trees weren't yet an established tradition. A few previous presidents had them, but they were the exception, not the rule. Christmas trees themselves were still a new trend in America. They didn't appear in American homes in any real numbers until after the Civil War. Even by Roosevelt's time, plenty of families saw them as wasteful, or a passing fad, or too cumbersome, too German, or they just weren't that into them. But the newspapermen wanted a story, wanted to sell papers, wanted to feed the public's fascination with the Roosevelts, a family larger than life, full of personalities too grand to be contained. They wanted to create headlines during the slow Christmas news cycle, wanted to turn the simple omission of a Christmas tree into a declaration of settled family policy. The president, the rough rider, the trust buster, he must have taken a stance. If there wasn't a Christmas tree, then surely he had outlawed them. And this was national news for several years. One paper even reported that it was the kids themselves who didn't like Christmas trees. Half-truths, untruths, and repeated rumors were the coin of the realm in the age of yellow journalism and muckraking. Like most rumors, it started with a grain or two of truth. By the time of Roosevelt's presidency, there really was a growing movement against cutting down Christmas trees. His predecessor, William McKinley, received letters from across the country urging him not to have one. The letter writers complained about waste, deforestation, the frivolity of the trend. One letter, according to the Chicago Daily Tribune, even called it arboreal infanticide. And Roosevelt really was a big conservationist. Conservation was a national cause back then. Congress had recently passed the Forest Reserve Act and appointed a chief of the U.S. Division of Forestry. Roosevelt himself created the United States Forest Service, established 150 national forests, and a host of federal bird reserves, national game preserves, and national parks. So when it became known that the Roosevelts didn't have a Christmas tree at the White House, and that Archie had smuggled one in, the story practically wrote itself, with pieces added on each telling. Details distorting and decaying like a copy of a copy of a copy. Later reports said that Roosevelt's own Forest Service chief, Gifford Pinchot, had lectured the president on the benefits of cutting trees sustainably, that Roosevelt had relented when he was faced with the science. Never mind the fact that Pinchot wasn't even in the country when that meeting was supposed to have happened. The Roosevelts did have Christmas trees, by the way, just not at the White House. We know that they had one at their home in Oyster Bay. So why not have one at the White House? We don't know. Maybe it was because the White House had recently been restored, or that the public rooms were in constant use and the living quarters, being used by a family with six kids, were too cramped. Here's what we do know. Archie really did pull off a secret Christmas tree in 1902. He really did ask the White House steward to buy an evergreen top from the market. We even know that it cost 22 cents. And we know that Quentin's nurse encouraged Archie to recruit the White House carpenter to wire the electric Christmas lights. But it was no grand act of defiance, no decree overturned, no dramatic turning point that caused President Roosevelt's heart to grow two sizes that day. It was just a little boy, eager to surprise his family with something special for Christmas. And in doing that, starting a family tradition, and a piece of history. We know from Roosevelt's own letters that while there was no official White House Christmas tree during his presidency, Archie and later Quentin did carry on putting up their own little tree every year. This wasn't the first story about a president and a tree that became a legend. Washington famously chopped down a cherry tree when he was a child. Lincoln sought refuge in the shade of a copper beech during the Civil War. So they say. And of course, it wasn't the first time a story about a tree and Christmas became the stuff of legend. Saint Boniface is said to have chopped down an oak tree before it could be used as the site of a human sacrifice. Standing behind the oak tree was a young fir, which became a symbol of rejecting the pagan past. So they say. That's the thing about history. Stories don't just shape our understanding of the past. They shape our traditions, our expectations, the way we think things have always been. The story of Archie's tree took on a life of its own, woven into the fabric of American Christmas lore, printed and reprinted until the legend became larger than the event itself. But the truth? The truth was already good enough. A little boy with a secret, a twinkling tree in a closet, a moment of joy on Christmas morning more than a century ago, and the making of a family tradition. No myth needed, just Christmas. Well, Christmas is less than 2 weeks away. I'll bet you're reminiscing about all of your family's stories and traditions that shaped Christmas for you. Whether any of them involved a sneaky Christmas surprise, I'd love to hear about them. I'll be sharing your Christmas memories this season in special episodes dedicated just to them. There's still time to send one, and all you have to do is record yourself speaking into your phone's voice memo app and send it to christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com. Keep it reasonably short, clean, and family-friendly, and be sure to say your name and where you're from. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California, by yours truly, Brian Earle. Thank you to Zach Brown for narrating that passage from the Ladies Home Journal article. And as always, thank you for listening and being here this Christmas season. There's still much more to come, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss anything. And don't forget, you can drop me a line anytime. I always love to hear from you. You can send me an email or connect with me on social media. Look for Christmas Past on your favorite social platform. And if you don't see me there, and you think I should be, get in touch to let me know. And hey, if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover this show? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a rating and review. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks. Reach out for details. And until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.